Talk New York sports on the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, I'm back. 102 on this Wednesday morning. Got you till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. Comes your way, 888-808-1019. On this day with the New York Mets, that's right, the New York Mets take care. Game one against the Milwaukee Brewers, who they did, as the last caller told you, had not played well against this year. And Rhys Hoskins has been the bane of your existence from the start of the year and the slide with Jeff McNeil and all that nonsense. He gets an RBI on a hit-by-pitch, but that's about it. Hits a big double play into a big double play in the third. And Severino, who, again, if you look at it, right, if when this all comes to an end, whether they win this series, win the next one, lose the next one, lose the next 2 days, whatever the case may be, when this season or win the World Series, when you're looking back and you say, well, you know, I know they won the game, but Severino, six innings, eight hits, three earned runs, three Ks, two walks. I mean, it's not really a masterclass. And no, it wasn't a masterclass, but he did what all great pitchers have to do. And when the Mets got the lead, he settled in later in this game and gave them two extremely valuable innings in the fifth and the sixth. And shut down innings. And allowed to not have to bring in Buto with runners on. Not have to use someone else to get the final outs of an inning, to get Buto the clean inning or whatever. Got you right to Buto in the seventh. And I thought you could have went Buto for the rest of the game, only because he doesn't pitch too much once. Like, I don't know if they'll use him again this series. If they do, if they were willing to do it, pulling him after, whatever, 20-something pitches, I guess it made sense. But Buto's been so good for them. Bullpen looked good in this game. The Brewers don't get on base again, and that's really where this game is won for me, because it felt like one of those games that it was kind of going to be like yesterday, or Monday, where, all right, Milwaukee scored, the Mets scored. Milwaukee scored, the Mets scored. Or here, when is it turn for Milwaukee to score? And instead, Severino goes out there and gives you two shutout innings, the bullpen comes in, and not another guy reaches base after the fourth. A clean fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth inning from this Met, from Severino and the Mets bullpen. And, you know, to go along with the offense and the rally in the fifth, it just feels like this team's going to come through when they need to. And I can't say enough about Jose Iglesias. It's crazy what's going on with him. It's absolutely crazy. He gets another infield single. I mean, if you heard the post game too, I mean, they can't have fun with him enough. I thought, you know, him and the reporters are going to take this on tour. I mean, they were laughing and yucking it up about his speed and his infield singles. And honestly, I thought they were going to make a show out of it. I've heard that the Robert Downey Jr. show on Broadway is pitiful. Maybe they can replace it. John Heyman and Jose Iglesias go back and forth about infield singles. Opening night, October 1st. I mean, right now, all the vibes are good. And Mendy did a great job in this game. I mean, he just did. He starts Winker, and Winker comes through with the base hit down the line for the triple that ties the game at two in the top of the second. He sets it up so he can pinch hit J.D. Martinez in the fifth with a lefty on the mound. He comes through with the base hit. He sticks with Severino when some might have pulled him. Some might have pulled him. I'm sure many Met fans were clamoring to have him pulled out of this game. And instead, he sticks with him, and he rewards him with those two innings. It's almost like everything Mendoza does right now has just been pitch perfect. And to go along with the Brewers manager making, in my mind, a terrible mistake taking out Peralta, it's just one of those things. Like, and his explanation, too, kind of makes no sense. Like, the Brewers played this game, and Pat Murphy played this game to, all right, I'm going to go with my ace, by the way, in Freddie Peralta. He's their ace. I'm going to go with my ace until I get a lead in the fifth, in the fourth. I'm not going to bring him out for the fifth inning, despite the fact he got nine straight outs. And he points to the one hard hit sacrifice fly as why, you know, I didn't want to see him go the third time around. It was going to be the bottom of the lineup in that fifth inning. It made absolutely no sense not to stick with him. It was almost like, hey, I got the one run lead. I have my bullpen all lined up in a pretty little row. I know exactly how I'm going to navigate the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth. I know exactly who I'm going to. It's been predetermined, much like Aaron Boone. And I'm going to go to it right now. Instead of trusting his ace to get him another few innings to help that bullpen. And now they are strapped. I mean, they pitched 1, 2, 3, 4. And they had to go to Savali for the last three innings to save their bullpen. Ashby had absolutely nothing. Mears pitching in the third. And Pyups didn't. He got two outs and currently has an ERA of 40.5. And Ashby has the infamous infinity ERA. But you had to go to Savali, who you thought might get a start in this. I don't know who. I'm not sure who they're going to start in game three. They got Montas on the mound tonight, and they're in a must-win situation. The Mets are heading in with house money. So the New York Mets right now are in such a great position as we watch the Padres take care of business against Atlanta, and I just told you what's going on in the American League. And to watch the Houston Astros fail in that big moment, to not be able to come through, it was kind of sweet. And now the New York Yankees are set up. But let's get to the Jets for a second. Still taking your Mech phone calls. Still taking your baseball calls at 888-808-1019. Let's get to the Jets just for a second here in the second hour, because I do think this is obviously a big story. Devontae Adams has now made it official. After some rumblings last year, some things early this year, and then Antonio Pierce, for whatever reason, somehow liking a post on social media about the possibility of trading Devontae Adams. I don't know if that's true. That's the report. I haven't heard the response about that, but it's gotten to the point where it's gotten ugly out in Vegas for Devontae Adams. He has now requested a trade, and then the Raiders in turn came out and put out a story or responded through the people that all, you know, the social media news breakers, that they would be willing to move him for a second round pick plus. And of course, anytime we talk about Devontae Adams, we talk about Aaron Rodgers. So for the New York Jets, now the conversation is, one, can they do it? Should they do it? How do you manipulate the cap, the amount of money he has left, all that conversation, and whether or not it's a good idea? And I got to be totally honest with you. Last year, I didn't think it was a good idea. And heading into this season, I didn't think it was a good idea. I have completely changed my mind. I think the Jets need to go out there and make this trade, and I'll tell you why. One specific reason. The reason I didn't want to make the trade is, while I still think Devontae Adams is great, I have no doubt that I don't know if he's as good, but I still have faith in Devontae Adams' ability. The Jets had a number one wide receiver. The Jets had Wilson. And have Wilson. And I just don't know the dynamic of and how it would upset the apple cart and what kind of, you know, situation that throws in if the old number one, the old reliable, the guy he used to have this great relationship with and this successful relationship with, when the ex-wife comes back, I don't know how you feel about it with the new relationship. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't think they needed it, because I thought, you know, they go out and get a Mike Williams, which they did. Garrett Wilson's unbelievable. They have Breece Hall at the running back position. Like, they have weapons in the offense where I don't think they need to trade a second round pick or whatever else. And here's why I'm changing my thought process on that. One, they need to win now, right? We all know that. They're in a win now mode. And the relationship with Rodgers and Garrett Wilson isn't there yet. It's been very puzzling to me why that dynamic isn't more explosive right out of the gate. And for two guys who can't stop talking up each other, right? And I poo-pooed some of the stuff we saw in camp with them arguing with each other on the sideline. And I talked about how I felt that was probably a good thing. And it's good to have that kind of communication and not be afraid to have this young wide receiver speak his mind to the great Aaron Rodgers. He shouldn't tiptoe around him. He shouldn't walk on eggshells. He should be willing to say, hey, listen, this is how I see it. I don't understand. Tell me, explain to me, because I see it like this, or whatever the case may be. And I put it all under the positivity of Aaron Rodgers building here. And while I still expect that relationship to grow, and while I still expect those two to be on the same page, and I do think that Garrett Wilson is an unbelievable talent and will ultimately be a great player with Aaron Rodgers, I don't have time to wait. I didn't think I'd have to wait. And we've seen four games, and it ain't there right now. And this team needs to win right now. And the money would be a commitment really just for, I believe, this year. And then he's probably going to want to restructure the contract, which might help you if you're the New York Jets to kind of get under the cap and play games with the numbers. You know how the cap is fungible. But whatever you got to do, if it's going to take a second-round pick, that's fine. I was listening a little bit to the afternoon show as I was driving, you know, taking my son to the game, whatever, that there are thoughts that it would be for Garrett Wilson. Like, that makes, I'm not trading away Garrett Wilson. I'm not sending Garrett Wilson to the Raiders in exchange for Davante Adams. That doesn't make any sense. I want both of them here. Think of that wide receiving core. Adams, Wilson, Mike Williams, and Lazard to go along now with what Breece Hall is in the passing game. And then obviously what Allen can be in the running game if they ever give him the ball at the goal line. That's the team I want because I'm trying to win a championship and I have to do it now. And I didn't like it because I wanted Wilson and Rodgers to be the thing. And I wasn't sure if Davante Adams could take that secondary role with Aaron Rodgers, if Aaron Rodgers would allow it. And in a way, some of my concerns have been warranted because it feels like Lazard is the kind of go-to guy, and I don't want that. Like, early on here, Aaron Rodgers has leaned into comfortability. And the relationship with him and Wilson is puzzling to me. And so while I didn't feel it was necessary, and I don't know if it is necessary, the fact of the matter is the Jets need to win. And the Jets need to win now. Now, I know he's dealing with a hamstring a little bit, and I don't know, as the weeks go by, the money gets a little better. You lose, I think it's just under $1 million of relief of the cap or of his contract every week that goes by. If you wait to the early November trade deadline, you'll get him for a little bit less money. I kind of want him in the building as soon as possible if it's going to happen because I'm trying to win games now. And I just think my feeling has changed watching the team and watching the relationship between Aaron Rodgers and Wilson and not feeling good about it. That was part of the team I felt good about. We heard about it. He kept on talking him up and the mutual respect that was shown. And now to the point where Wilson is obviously doing, if you didn't hear, he was on with Bart Scott and kind of knocked Nathaniel Hackett's offense and talked about how when he watches football on Sundays, he sees a lot of teams doing a lot of things, and he's not sure about the New York Jets. And so he's unhappy in this offense already. I mean, that's a pretty tame way to show it. I don't think he lambasted anybody or really went out there deep into his comments or called anybody out specifically. But he's unhappy. And I understand why he is, because he's not getting the football. And I'm unhappy as someone who thought this team could be dynamic offensively, because part of it is that they have this young, super talented wide receiver, and we haven't seen it. So either that gets fixed really quickly, or I don't care about it, and I got to win. And if it's easier to import someone who already has that relationship with Rodgers inside this offense, if that's the quickest path to getting this going as opposed to trying to figure it out with Garrett Wilson, then I'm all in for it because they need to win. Now, they're not going to be the only team who's looking for his services. Obviously, Kansas City is just bereft of talent at the wide receiver position, and I'm sure that's a place that Davante Adams wouldn't mind going. I heard Tiki just before I was walking in on SNY saying he's heard rumblings about Washington. And if you want to go establish yourself, if you believe you have years left, you want to go play with a young, budding superstar quarterback like Daniels inside a division that has struggled here. But for me, I think the Jets and Aaron Rodgers, clearly, as he told Kay Adams, that how could you not miss playing with Aaron Rodgers? So it's a perfect fit. It was never a bad fit. It was just I thought it would stunt the growth of a relationship that now, to me, already looks stunted. And I don't know why it's taking so long. They had all of camp. I mean, he felt comfortable enough to go to Egypt when he's supposed to be building a relationship. You wanna get on, this is when you start to get upset about those kind of things. I didn't mind it at the time. But now, if him and Wilson can't get on the same page and the offense looks like it did the other day, but a lot going on in Jetland, a lot. And then you get to I think now it's at the point where you have to try and do it. You have to try and bring in Davante Adams. I mean, it would never have been a bad idea. I just probably wouldn't have done it. Now I'm at the point where I got to win. And I can't wait for this relationship to grow with the idea maybe it never does. He's already upset with the offense. He's not making an impact on the field on Sundays for the most part. Rodgers is going elsewhere in critical plays. He's not getting in the end zone, and the offense is struggling. And we know the kind of confidence and relationship he has with Davante Adams, and I still believe, while maybe not the player he was 2 or 3 years ago, that he's a top wide receiver in this league. So I don't know how else but to change my mind and say, go out and do whatever you can to be a winner right now. And it feels like that the Hassan Reddick situation, which could help them, they really haven't created much pressure on the quarterback without blitzing. It could help them. That feels like that's never going to happen. So like, how many of these moves are you going to allow to pass by, these all-in type moves, when you're clearly in an all-in moment? And then you can get to the Rodgers and the Saleh part of this, where, of course, he went back on Pat McAfee, which I guess he's going to continue to do, and talked about his relationship with Robert Saleh. And I guess maybe I'm naive, but I believe him when he says there's not really that he has a great relationship with Robert Saleh. I do. I know I was listening to Boomer one morning, I guess Monday morning, driving home, and he does not. He thinks there's definitely a problem. And I understand the questions and the answers in the postgame, but I think Aaron Rodgers and Saleh just opens his mouth too much, and I think Aaron Rodgers is extremely comfortable saying whatever he thinks. And I don't know if just, like, talking about the cadence and rebutting his coach's opinion on it means that there's a problem. I think Aaron Rodgers just gives his opinion, and he knows his standing inside the organization. I don't think they're at odds necessarily. He's just like, oh, is that what he said? Yeah, I don't agree with that. Well, does not agreeing with someone indicate that there is a major problem in the relationship? Because it's not my 7-year-old son disagreeing with my opinion on his punishment. Like, that's what it's almost like. We believe, like Aaron Rodgers, oh man, he went against the coach. They are on par. I've been saying this forever. Aaron Rodgers and Robert Saleh are on par. He's the head coach. He's the head coach of the offense and the quarterback. He's not an underling or an employee of Robert Saleh, as much as we all think, or some of you think, that needs to be the coach-quarterback relationship, coach-player relationship. So when a reporter says, you know, Robert Salas is something about the cadence, and he's like, eh, or we could just hold these guys accountable because it's on the players and continue to do something that's been uber successful for me throughout my career. That is not a direct, Robert doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, as much as we'd like to make it so. He could have moved on from Robert Saleh. He could have put a knife in Robert Saleh's back. He could have tried to get a new head coach. He didn't. He stuck up for these guys. He went to bat for Nathaniel Hackett. He went to bat for this head coach. I do believe they have a fine relationship. I think Rodgers knows he wields power and has no problem throwing it around. And we'll find out if all of this is ultimately going to be the demise of what could be a promising, talented roster. But for me right now, as disappointing as Sunday was, it's already Wednesday and I'm moving away from it. And they've got a game on early Sunday morning in London against Minnesota and a defensive coordinator who has that team playing its ass off defensively and a former top pick of the New York Jets playing MVP-type football at the quarterback position. But, like, we're acting like Thursday against the Patriots never happened. It's one game, and I'm concerned about how he can throw in the weather. I'm concerned about when things aren't going right if they're able to make the adjustments. I'm concerned about the lack of communication. I'm concerned about that final drive and wide receivers just, you know, running down the field and he's looking for back shoulder throws and they're not on the same page at all. Those things concern me. I'm concerned. But I also aren't ready to just say they hate each other there. It's never going to work. Rodgers looked slow and old and tired, and he can't throw in the rain, and it's preposterous to say they're a playoff team when they haven't been in 13 years. I'm not going to go against everything I believed for ever since Rodgers has been here, and certainly now since he's been healthy. One bad loss against the Broncos, as ugly as it is, it makes me have questions that need to be answered. But suddenly, him and the coach hate each other. The offense is stagnant and tired, and hey, to be fair to the haters who will say that, that's what the wide receiver just said. The coach stinks, the offensive coordinator stinks, and this thing will never work, and we saw it all play out one day against Denver. Like, as ugly as that loss was and as disappointing as I found it, I'm not ready to just move on from the New York Jets. And there's just always so much crap around them. It's unbelievable. The amount of crap satellites that they manage to keep in their orbit is unbelievable to me. Like, one push on the sidelines, him and the coach have an issue. You know, the wide receiver has a bad answer to a question in an interview. He's still doing things with Pat McAfee. Like, there's just now a disgruntled wide receiver across the country because he once played with Aaron Rodgers is somehow thrown into the mix. Like, there's just always something around this team. And there's only one way to cut it out. And that's go out there and beat Minnesota and London. 888-808-1019. Let's get to Stephen in Utica. What's up, Stephen?
Hey, it's Stephen.
I'm sorry, buddy. I apologize, Stephen.
Okay.
How are you?
How are you?
Good. And I should know, I had my godfather's name was Stefan. I should know that. How are you?
I think this year could be the Miracle Mets again, kind of like 1969. They, at spring training, they weren't expected to go this far, and everything after this is gravy as far as how far they make it.
Well, I mean, that's certainly true. I got to be the one thing I will say that I'm a little tired of with this Met team is constantly saying that, oh, nobody expected this. And if you have to pull that to use it for motivation, God bless. I'm never going to tell you, and it seems to have worked. But to me, expectations change. And to say that, oh, nobody expected us to be here, well, you can't have it both ways. You can't say no one expected us to be here and then praise the idea that you've been the best team in Major League Baseball since June 1st. Like, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, well, technically we have the best record for the last 3.5 months of the year, and then tell me, oh, we're just lucky to be here and nobody expected it. Like, there is now raised expectations for this team. They played the first two games of a four-game set against Atlanta and went right there to be the number one wild card before falling back out of it, only to get back into it. So I understand that no one expected at the start of the year. Gary Cohen gives you the 0-5 to 0-OMG. Totally true. Mendoza's been using it. JD Martinez has been using it. That's fine. Whatever's going to motivate you, I don't care. Go win the games. I'm not nitpicking. I'm just saying I've heard enough of this. Nobody expected us to be here. Because you're also going to tell me with after that breath, you're going to tell me how they've been the best team for the last 4 months of the season. So whether they expect you to be here or not, you're playing like a team who deserves to be here. You're playing like a team who should be here. And although, like, I think I'd like to draw the line of demarcation because I think it's two separate things. I don't like the idea of everything from here on is gravy. I don't like that idea. I don't like that they have nothing to lose. They're playing with house money. Everything is gravy. I don't like that. And you know what? I don't know if it's true. Whenever you get here, you have an obligation to go give it a go because you never know when you're going to get back. As stable as we think this franchise is, and as good hands as we think it is, there's no guarantee of anything. So I don't like the house money. I don't like the gravy. What I will say is whatever happens from this point out, this season has been stamped a success. I do think there's a line there. I don't think they're the same thing. Has this year been a success now that they've made the playoffs? Yes. At the beginning of the year when they said we're going to hope to be a playoff team while rebuilding, they've accomplished that. The grimace, the OMG, all the fun, all the coming from behind, all the the offensive production in the middle of the season, coming back from 11 games under 500, all of that gets stamped approved and successful. And a season that this team can look back on and this fan base can look back on with fond memories and feel good about when someone says the 2024 Mets, whether they win this game, these next two games or not, you can say, yeah, that was one hell of a season. So if you want to say that's the same thing and I'm parsing words, I don't view it that way. There's a difference between stamping the season as success and now feeling like, well, it doesn't matter if I win or lose. Of course it matters. I don't think it's gravy. I think they're good enough. They've been good enough. They have the best record, the best pitcher's ERA. Like, all these things that I'm told that are facts, but you can't brag about them and then say, oh, it's okay if we lose. You know, this was all gravy. All we had to do is make the playoffs to have a successful season. Like, it stamps all the fun. It makes it okay to look back on as a good, solid year. But they just won the first game of this wild card. They got to go out and beat Milwaukee. Now, I'm not telling you if they lose to the Philadelphia Phillies, I'm going to kill them or that we're going to all bash them for a miserable end to this incredible run. But there's going to be a lot of disappointment. And I just don't like the word... everything from here on out is gravy. I don't think it is. All it did was not ruin this year. Not making the playoffs would have ruined the year. There's a difference between avoiding worst-case scenario and being okay with the second worst-case scenario. And that's what I think the Mets have done. The Mets have set themselves up for at least being able to look back, and especially if they do what we all expect them to do and continue this new era of Met baseball where you expect them to be back here next year. And you expect more money to be put on the books with guys like Scherzer and Verlander coming off the books and some money coming off the books, possibly Pete Alonso's contract coming off the books. So you expect them to reinvest money. You expect more guys to come up along with Acuna, guys they've traded for, guys they've built up. Mauricio, yes. That's what I was talking about when I said adding free agents and spending money. Yes, Mike, possibly Juan Soto. Juan Soto's busy right now, okay? Juan Soto is a New York Yankee. I don't know what he will be, but he is a Yankee. And they have a big game coming up on Saturday. I'm going to try and get there. But as long as this team progresses, this year you're going to be able to look back on as the beginning and great, and blah, blah, blah. But it's not gravy. Because if it's homemade gravy, let me ask you one question. Where's the lumps? I feel like I've said that a couple times and nobody ever remembers that reference. Nobody ever gets the reference. Nobody remembers the Where's the Lumps commercials. I said that to somebody else too. This exact topic of it's gravy came up and I made a Where's the Lumps joke. And they looked at me like I had no idea what I'm talking about. Fliegelman, do you remember when I say Where's
no
the Lumps?
No idea what you're talking about.
Damn it. Do you know when I say Where's the Beef?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So remember
but
that.
I was too young for that commercial. That one is just so iconic.
It's just so iconic. Okay. But there was a canned, I can't remember the name of the company, but there was a canned gravy commercial. And then there's a older woman and her husband, and the husband kind of looks like Minko. You know, like a kind of the U-pattern baldness, gray-haired guy, happy, kind of somewhat ignorant to his surroundings face on him. And she's all pissed that store-bought gravy is becoming popular. And she's complaining, and she's like, I work hard for that gravy, and that chicken soaks for how long? And this isn't real gravy. This is nonsense, and you got to earn the gravy. Right, honey? And she nudges her husband, and the guy goes, right, yeah. Yeah, if it's real gravy, where's the lumps? And she gives him a look like, are you insinuating there's lumps in my gravy? Like that kind of thing. I can't believe no one remembers Where's the Lumps. 888-808.
When we made Heinz Homestyle Gravy, we used a homemade recipe like yours.
Oh, really?
Real beef juices, just like yours.
Oh, yeah, but where are the lumps? Oh, no.
Heinz Homestyle Gravy, so close to homemade.
There you go. Oh, yeah, where's that? That's the husband, if you couldn't tell the voice.
Hey, she looks furious
at
him. Yeah,
she's very mad at him. And you even hear him go, oh, no.
I like how you couldn't remember who it's for. Heinz, maybe the most popular condiment brand ever.
I have to be totally honest with you, and not to put down canned gravy, because sometimes I've had it. I've never bought canned gravy. It's not one of the things. My mother agreed with that woman in the commercial. We did not have canned gravy growing up as kids, and I don't remember. And now I never. Not that I ever have gravy, because honestly, if you're making something. And I feel this way about Thanksgiving. No need to get into this conversation right now in the middle of October. It comes up in a month or two. But if you need to smother something in gravy, then I'd rather not make it. Like, that's how I've always felt about Thanksgiving dinner. Like, oh, and the this and the gravy. And I'm like, all right, if I got to put gravy on something to make it taste good, should I celebrate it as one of the great meals of the year? I don't know.
This commercial's from 1988. What were you watching in 88 that you saw this so many times?
Fraggle Rock. I have no idea. I don't know, but I remember it very clearly. The Where's the Lumps commercials. Oh, yeah, Where's the Lumps? Oh, no. And does he look like Minko?
Or a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit like Minko. Yeah.
I mean, just in that he's a bald, older white man.
Right, yeah, exactly.
You could also say like he looks like Tim Walz, you could pick.
Right, yeah. I could pick a lot.
Oh, no is why, definitely for me, I would think of Minko.
Yeah, no, because it's the befuddled sort of, not really aware of his surroundings or that's going to piss his wife off, that comment. Like, it's kind of like a comment made by someone who hasn't, who doesn't realize he just put his foot in his mouth with his wife. Which you have to become an expert at that. I've been married long enough to know exactly what to say and when to say. I know exactly what to avoid. I know exactly what to stay away from, and that's the kind of thing you stay away from.
Well, yeah, but where are the lumps? Oh, no.
Huh? 888. Oh, no. 888-808-1019. I haven't heard that commercial in a long time. McMonagle here with you on The Fan, talking commercials, talking Jets for a little bit there. Welcome in your Jet phone calls. What do you think? Am I wrong here? Am I the ignorant old man talking about lumps? Because I honestly don't believe that there is a major issue. I mean, they might have a major issue at the head coach position. That might be totally fair. But I don't believe there is a major problem between the coach and the quarterback. I just don't. And now with Davante Adams asking for a trade, the Raiders open to moving him, is this something the Jets absolutely need to go and bring him back and bring him back with Aaron Rodgers, make that unite those two together and try and go out there and do everything you can in a must-win season. 888-808-1019. Plus, of course, the Mets and the Yankees play baseball on Saturday. And who will be their opponent? Feels like the Kansas City Royals.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
He's homered! Derek Jeter homers to tie the game. And there it is, hit number 3,000.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 142. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. I just looked at it just to be sure. The Mets are favored in the game tonight. As slight a favorite as you could be, they're minus 110 on the money line. The Brewers are minus 106. So that is as slight a favorite as you can be, but I love the Mets in this game. Love them. And to me, the best play of the day, since, you know, I don't know, it's 1:42 in the morning. I'm thinking about this right now because I do love baseball. There's nothing better. I'm sorry. I know I'm in the minority here. I love playoff baseball. I love it. It's my favorite. To me, the best play of the day is the Royals with Lugo on the mound at plus 132. I think Houston wins. I don't know. I just can't imagine this team getting swept in two games by the Tigers. I just can't. I can't imagine Houston going out like that. This team has been too good for too long. They've got too many guys. I know Alvarez might be a shell of himself dealing with a knee injury right now. He was in the lineup. But they still have Altuve. They still have Bregman. They still have Tucker. They still, you know, they have Brown on the mound against Holton for the Tigers. I just can't imagine the Astros getting swept. They might lose this series. I can't imagine them getting swept. They've made seven consecutive ALCSs. Seven consecutive. I just don't think they're going to go quietly and lose two straight games to the Tigers. The Orioles, however, yeah, I think that's possible. So as I look at it, you got the Royals plus 132 on the money line. That's my favorite pick of the day. That and the Mets at minus 110. Braves, Padres, I don't know if I have a good feel for. Freed was so good the last time out. You remember Musgrove and his slippery years against the Mets last year in the postseason pitch, 2 years ago in the postseason pitch well. They just had a ho-hum victory against the Braves last night. That's a tougher one. But to me, the two best bets of the four-game wild card docket later today, I love the Royals to take care of the O's in two games at plus 132. And the Mets and Manaea versus Frankie Montas, minus 110 on the money line. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Paul in California. What's up, Paul?
Yeah, how are you? Thank you. I like you. I like you too, Paul. I wanted to ask you this question.
Yes.
I've been a Dodger fan since I'm a little boy, and I love the Yankees since I was a little boy.
It's an odd combo.
1962. I like the Dodgers better than both of them combined.
Okay.
And I think the Dodgers are going to get dumped this year so fast.
I'm going to let you finish, I promise. I just want to say something to you real quick, okay? Thank you. Thank you for making me feel and the audience know that it's not just us who, when you love your team, you immediately believe they're going to blow it. I appreciate that. I appreciate that that same sentiment and mindset exists on both coasts of this great country. Thank you very much, Paul.
Okay. Well, thank you. I know you're really good at analyzing things. I want you to tell me what you think. The Dodgers starting pitching, the earned run average is so pitiful that they give up big chunks of runs in the first three innings, destroying the offenses in morale and confidence and destroying the bullpen. Mm-hmm. That the Dodgers, even though they have the most wins in baseball, 98 wins,
yeah,
Ohtani is not going to know what hit him. No matter how great he is, what kind of a year he has, He's going to have the door slammed in his face by his starting pitching that is going to crush the Dodgers, and they're going to get dumped. And so this is what happened the last couple of years. And so this year, even worse, the Dodgers probably will be the first team that will start a game with the bullpen. That's never been happened in the playoffs, I don't believe, in divisional play or the best, you know, National League Championship or even the World Series.
Yeah, no, there has. There have been playoff games who have started with an opener now.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't recall. You mean in the World Series?
No, not. I don't know about in the World Series. I'd have to go back and look at it. But there definitely have been, like, if you want to quibble with it, the Yankees kind of did it in 2020 with they brought in Devi Garcia to start the game and then went to AJ Happ. Nobody knew that was the plan, but that's what ended up happening. I got to think. I'm pretty sure there have been other bullpen games thrown out of necessity and everything, but yeah. Listen, the pitching for the Dodgers has been poor this year. They're dealing with injuries, obviously. The lineup is terrific, and they, like you said, they've won the most games. But the issues with the Dodgers in the postseason since the championship of 20 has been the offense has been terrible in these series. Mookie Betts is one of the worst since 2021. Mookie Betts is one of the worst playoff performers in the league. I mean, he's been terrible in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Right, right. Yeah. And even now, he makes outs very easily by popping out a lot. And so Ohtani goes dark, except for the last 2 weeks, of course. Ohtani went dark. Many games were 0 for 4, 1 for 4, lots of strikeouts. And Freddie Freeman's got an injured ankle. So what do you think the Dodgers are going to do this year? Where do you think the Dodgers are going to wind up in your analysis that you can share with me now?
Yeah, I mean, listen. I think they have a lineup, even with your concerns, that is as good as anybody. I think I would guess they're probably going to play the Padres, who have a very good bullpen. They got a good lineup themselves. What you saw from Michael King last night, 12 strikeouts in a brilliant performance. To go along with Musgrove, and you know, they've got some starting pitching. They're a very good team. Could the Dodgers lose? Absolutely. We've talked about this. There is no great team. I think the Mets could absolutely beat Philadelphia. I don't know if Milwaukee can beat Philly, but the Mets can beat Philly. And I same thing with the other series. I don't know if the Braves can beat the Dodgers, but I feel pretty strong that the San Diego Padres can beat the Dodgers, which they did a couple years ago. I think that this is wide open. So if you're looking for reasons why the Dodgers will fail or what I think about the Dodgers, I think they're good enough to win the World Series. I think they're good enough to lose the first three games of the NLDS to the Padres. That's what I think. I think it could be said about almost every team. There's not a team among them that I can firmly say, oh, there's no way they're losing. I think the Yankees will beat Kansas City if it's Kansas City for sure. I believe that. Doesn't mean I know it for sure, and if it wouldn't shock me if they lost to Kansas City. I think Cleveland can lose to either Detroit or Houston, and I think the Mets can absolutely knock off Philadelphia, and I think the Padres can absolutely knock off the Dodgers. Now, I don't think there's a team here where it's like, oh. But I got to admit, as a Yankee fan, and I appreciate the call, Paul, but I'm not going to focus too much on the Los Angeles Dodgers here in this 5-hour midnight ride on a New York sports radio show here on The Fan, 888-808-1019. I will tell you this. I don't believe any team among them would have an easier path to the World Series than the New York Yankees if both Houston and Baltimore are eliminated in the wild card series. If it is, let's just say every team that won game one wins the series. So we're looking at Cleveland against Detroit, the Yankees against Kansas City, Philadelphia against the Mets, and Los Angeles against the Padres. Under those circumstances, the easiest path to the World Series is through the Bronx. I think they would have the easiest go of it. I'm not saying they'll win. What I'm saying is they better freaking win. If you ask me what path is the easiest, you got to take on the Kansas City Royals, and then the winner, you have to take on the Kansas City Royals, which, by the way, if you look at Kansas City, and this goes true for almost every, other than Cleveland, even Detroit, I believe, but I Fliegelman and I were talking about this. If you take out Kansas City's games against the White Sox, which isn't entirely fair, I understand that, and they do have some pitching and a decent lineup and an MVP caliber player. If you take out Kansas City's record against the White Sox, they're under 500. They are under 500 against everybody else in baseball. And the reason they're a wild card team is because they dominated the worst team in the history of the sport. So, I mean, if it's Kansas City and then you have to play the winner of Detroit-Cleveland, the Yankees better be in the freaking World Series. That's all I have to say. If they're gonna avoid Baltimore and Houston, there is no doubt. Now, if it's Milwaukee and the Braves, you could make a case for one of those two teams, but LA and Philly are legitimately good. Like, I suppose if Milwaukee knocks off Philadelphia in the next round and the Braves and the Dodgers get like Braves-Milwaukee, okay, that's a pretty easy path for the Dodgers. If Philadelphia gets Milwaukee and the Braves, okay, especially if Sale's having back issues, okay. But if we just take the two teams that have, if we take all four teams that have won the first round or the first game of the wild card, there is no doubt today as it stands, the New York Yankees better get to the freaking World Series. Because there is not another team with an easier path. Let me ask Fliegelman this question, because I know he's passionate about it, because as soon as I walked in, he gave me the Yankees just got a bye to the World Series. Let me ask you, Mike. Okay, put up a call or two, if you have to. But I have to say that there is no doubt in my mind. They have the easiest path. They have to win. We want to talk about the great teams. Cleveland has an excellent bullpen, and Cleveland has Kwan at the top of the order, and they got Ramirez in the middle of the order. Like, that's it. All right, here we go. If we assume that the teams that won game one win the series, let's just take that assumption. The teams who won today are going to win their series. Is there another team that would have an easier path to the World Series than the New York Yankees?
No, not even close.
Not even close.
And I thought that before the post. You know, my thought before this postseason started, I thought 5 to 6 of the toughest teams were in the National League.
Right.
And obviously, the one that is tough includes the Yankees. So, I mean, and Houston is more just basing it on their pedigree than their current roster.
Right.
Like, I think the Diamondbacks who missed it in the NL are better than the Royals. Better than the time. I mean, the Royals wouldn't be in the playoffs if not for the White Sox.
No, I was just
they're under 500 against the rest of baseball. They stink. The Orioles have completely fallen apart. This is as fortunate a road to the World Series that you could ask for. You still got to go out
and
obviously
games,
and win the games. But compared to some teams the Yankees have had to face in the past,
right?
You'd sign up for this instead.
If it's the Yankees versus Kansas City and Cleveland versus Detroit. If that's who's left, the Yankees better be in the freaking World Series.
You can answer this as a Yankee fan. Like, is there any team out of that trio that you wouldn't be furious at your team for losing to?
No.
I think the answer, right.
No.
That's the right answer. Anybody can couch it however they want.
Yeah.
You'd be so peed off
if the Yankees
lost to one of those teams.
There's no doubt.
The Astros would have been a little bit different. They're the Astros. So many of those players are still there.
Yeah.
Those AL Central teams, I'm sorry, unacceptable. Maybe even you could live with the Orioles. They see each other so many times. They do have a lot of talent.
Yeah.
It can't be one of those Central
teams. No, I know. But you know what's funny about it that's making me think it is because I got so much pushback. If you remember, before the storyline was the Yankees don't beat bad teams because now they have the best record in baseball with teams over 500. But at the start of the year when they were getting all those wins and building up that record before they had their midseason slump, everybody told me they don't beat good teams because they lost to the Orioles and split a series with Seattle. Or whatever. And I'd be like, hey, They won a series versus Cleveland. Cleveland's got the best record in the American League right there with them. And everybody battled, sent it back with me. The entire Central sucks. That was the response. I don't care about Cleveland. I don't care about Kansas City. Because I'd be like, they took 3 out of 4 from Kansas City. That's a playoff team. They beat the Minnesota Twins. They were a playoff team almost the entire year. They took care of Cleveland. That's a playoff team. I don't care. The entire Central sucks. That's what I got over and over again. Sean Marash, like everyone. The Central sucks. The Central sucks.
The Seattle Mariners probably agree with you right now.
Yeah, I know, right, exactly. If that's who I have to go through to get to a World Series and I can't, I'm going to be pissed off. No, there's no doubt. I'm be pissed
and
off.
It's also, it's big, and this is my belief. And like this even applies to the Mets, who were underdogs coming into the series against Milwaukee. These small market teams, you know my thoughts on this, they're so illegitimate.
Yeah.
They're built for the 162. Well, we're out of the 162 now. So right. If you're one of these big market teams, pound them.
Yep.
Destroy them.
Yep. But looking at it, I think the Mets have an absolute chance to beat Philadelphia. I think the Padres have an absolute chance to beat LA. I would think Houston would have a chance to beat. Like I'm trying to, because he was talking about the Dodgers and the last caller and whether or not the Dodgers could get through, and just the nature of this year. So many teams that are just average, and I could see the Yankees losing everybody and beating everybody. Same thing for the Dodgers. But just looking at it now that I have the picture right in front of me.
It's not just the Yankees. I would say, like, if the Dodgers, if the Padres, if the Phillies, yeah. Braves, if any of those teams, we're talking about the options being those three AL Central teams.
Right.
You have to beat them. Correct. No excuses. I don't care. Those three teams do not belong in the same category as the NL teams plus the Yankees.
No, you're right. You're right. It's setting up for the actual year they do it, or despite the disasters that have been and the losses that have been all the way dating back since 2009, this would be the biggest slap in the face and the biggest heartbreak yet from the New York Yankees. There's no doubt. This will be the year that you... 2019, they might have been better than this team, but they had the Astros team, and that was legitimate. You could argue the 17 team might have been better. The 2018 team won 100 games. You could argue they were better than this version of the New York Yankees. But they had a 110-win Red Sox team in front of them, and 17 had the World Series champion Astros. Like, they had better competition by far. This Yankee team is clearly the best team in the American League, and if the second and third best, I think you could argue Houston and Baltimore might be the second and third best teams in the American League. If they get wiped out in the first wild card, there is no excuse for the Yankees. It would just be a disaster.